Second hour of Atlanta soccer tonight underway. That's still really cool to say. And the reason why we get a second hour of Atlanta soccer tonight and we get it a couple hours early tonight is because of all of you guys out there listening. Thank you so much for taking your time each and every Tuesday to spend it with me, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. I am joined by a whole gang of soccer talkers here in the Colony Square Studios, the Kia Studios, Abe Gordon, Madison Cruz, John Nelson, Jarrett Smith. We're going to try to reset a little bit about Atlanta United in 2026 and kind of fill in a few of the gaps of what we heard after training today. A couple of things to get used to in 2026 with Tata Martino back. Madison Cruz and I are at training each and every day and when media is available. And last few years, we got a chance to watch a lot of sessions. We're not going to get to watch a lot of sessions with Tata Martino. He keeps everything under wraps. That's his prerogative. It's worked for him in his career. We're going to have to translate some things from what players say and what we see in games when we talk about this team. I thought today was really interesting with Steven Alzate and Juan Bettercall speaking, and I thought it filled in the gaps a little bit of what we haven't been able to see in preseason. We've only seen one game. They only played two other games. The third game in Texas got rained out. So three preseason games. Who is Atlanta United in 2026? The two things that jumped out to me that those guys said today, Steven Alzate talked about being in the best shape of his life. His word for preseason was sprints, which was funny. And Juan Bettercall, his was intensa, like the intensity of it. I think we got a glimpse into how maybe demanding preseason has been for this team so far.
Well, I think especially for Juan Bettercall as well as for Steven Alzate, this is their first preseason with Atlanta United as well. And it's under Tata Martino. They get an opportunity to, you know, just get a preseason with everyone, get the chance to really be embracing it, get the chance to travel with the team, get to know the team a bit better. And it's implementing a different style, a different idea of what Tata Martino wants for this side. And I think sprints was very funny. That was just I think what struck me was when we were in there, when Steven Alzate was asked this, he like sat there for a little bit, was thinking, and then he just looked at all of us and went, sprints, and this that was it. No, but I think we're gonna see a side that is, you know, we already know the way that Tata wants to play this team. We saw it with Miami, we saw it in 2017-18. That has obviously adjusted and shifted when he went to Miami, but I think we're gonna see a very similar style to what we saw in 2024 from Inter Miami, and it's gonna be that high intensity, high press. You're gonna see that high line be stationed there a lot. You're gonna see this team just continue to attack and try to get the ball and keep pushing it forward as quickly as they can. You saw it against Lexington. How quickly, when they flipped the field, how quickly was it 1-2 and then immediately into the box in the 18?
Verticalidad.
Exactly.
That is going to be a word you'll hear a lot from Tata Martino and about this team. But here's the difference, Jarrett, and I think this is where 17-18 comes back into focus rather than 24 Miami. Tata had to adjust to having Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez towards the end of their careers. He wasn't able to high press as much as often as maybe he would have liked, as he did here in 17 and 18 early on, and then that kind of dialed back a little bit. He's got some guys who can press in this team this year, and I think we saw it against Lexington in the preseason game. So I think it's a little bit more the verticality that we're going to be watching for with this team. How they get the ball back is going to be one thing, whether they press, whether they trap, wherever it is. They're not just going to sit back and counter, but when they win it, they're going to get vertical fast.
Yeah, and how they win it and how they do that is going to be the interesting part. Is it going to be a matter of we're just creating transitions through? Sometimes we sit back. Sometimes we have to manage the game, especially in the second half of the year. You talked about earlier when the schedule gets compressed, when you have to manage games, when guys' legs get heavy, and you just don't necessarily want to or can control the game for 80 minutes with the ball. Or are you going to create the good old-fashioned artificial transition by trying to draw a team out and trying to create those opportunities, which sometimes is easier said than done. But yeah, being able to get moving over the top with the guys you have, with the speed. Miguel Almirón does not have the same wheels he had in 2018. We said this last year that I need Miguel Almirón to be the player, he's the best version of himself now. I don't need him to be the 2018 version of himself because he's not the same guy.
Right.
Because it's almost a decade ago. You cannot fairly expect someone to be that guy, be the best version of himself now. Be guys like Sabalo Chinitza when he gets chances on the field. You have to take advantage of them. Luke Brennan, who we've seen in preseason, take advantage of those chances. Get vertical, take guys on, try and make something happen, and try and put a defense under duress. Force them to make the play that so often last year it felt like your defense did not make.
Jarrett, you mentioned Luke Brennan. I think something that we saw in that Miami team in 2023-24 under Tata Martino is he was not afraid to play young players. I think of Benjamin Kremowski really coming into his own under Tata Martino, quite a few others. So many young, talented players that he had in that academy that had a couple of years on it. There's a little bit of a false narrative, in my opinion, Abe, of he didn't like to play young players when he was here. The academy had just started. I think it's not fair to compare that. When we look at who's played in preseason, and again, we've only seen 90 minutes, but you think of who's played. Adrian Gill, who's new to the team but 20 years old. Toto Majub from the second team has been involved in the first team with preseason. We've seen Cooper Sanchez play a lot. We've seen Brennan. Matt Edwards is back from injury. Jay Fortune probably a couple weeks away, but another one who's going to factor in. So much young talent that I think when you get into that crowded part of the schedule and you're playing with a good bit of intensity in the way you want to play, you're going to need those young guys.
I think the amount of young guys that have debuted for this team over the past 2 years that I had to ask Maddie about pregame and then compliment with John postgame has been incredible. And I think you'd be blind to that fact coming in if you're a Tata or for the fans to respect what this academy has done in preparing players to come to the MLS. There have been so many guys last year for injury, for a variety of reasons that were thrust into duty, whether it was from the start or as a sub, that you just sat there. The moment wasn't too big for these guys.
Yep.
It just wasn't. And so that has all led to now this, where you have some of those players that you can afford to put out there without that significant drop-off, without the moment being too big or too emotional, any of that stuff. It has been impressive the past couple of years, and you're right. I think Tata's going to be, one, forced to, but probably also willing to and excited to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think he'll really enjoy seeing the young players' growth as this year goes on, and he gets a chance to work with them on a regular basis during the season and training and all of that. All right, John, I'm going to put you on the spot. You are the kind of wordsmith here at times. So we're going to talk about a word that I have enjoyed that Tata Martino brought back out. This was something that he has historically said throughout his career. He talked about it during his time at Newell's Old Boys. He talked about it during his time at Barcelona. He talked about it during his time with the Paraguayan national team, protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a question that I asked him at the very beginning of preseason, and I asked him if his mentality, his philosophy had changed over the years. And he said no, and I think obviously, his teams are going to look a little different place to place because he's got different players. But he used the word protagonist, and he talked about what that meant to him. When you hear that, how do you think that translates to what fans will see on the field?
I think that, at least from my perspective, it's about being proactive and not being reactive, if you want to use those two as opposites here. You're the one who's dictating pace of play. You're the one who's dictating the decision that can force a turnover. And if you are high pressing and you get a turnover in your attacking half, that's less room that guys got to run over. And if you can take that one possession and get that turnover and create an opportunity, that's what I'm thinking about when you're looking at protagonism. It is the idea of always the all foot, and I just put it in air quotes, that kind of an idea where it's, I'm going to tell you the decision you have to make by my own action. And not sitting there and waiting for that opposition to sit there and it's like, okay, we're going to just pass the ball around a little bit and we're going to make you wait. No, there's no waiting this year. It is going to be dialing it up and making sure that I can force a mistake on you so I can have an opportunity as quickly as possible going back the other way.
But I really liked today, Maddie, and it was my favorite thing that was said. I asked Juan Bettercall about how that translated to him, what being a protagonist on the field meant. And I liked that he and Juan is very good with English, and I know it's very new for him. We talked to him last year, and he was really brave in sitting down with us last season and doing an entire interview in English. I think it was his first ever.
Yeah.
He did a lot of the press conference in English today, but this was the only one where he was answering an English question, and he wanted to make sure that he expressed it properly. And he asked if he could do it in Spanish, and he went to Spanish. And the two things that jump out to me were, about being a protagonist, have personality to want the ball, and above all, not to have fear. That's not tactics. That is character.
I think it's something that was echoed even last season when Ronnie Dyla would talk to the media. He would say it too as well. It's to not be afraid. Like, dare to be afraid. Be comfortable being uncomfortable in situations, but not being afraid to make mistakes. I feel like we talk about it all the time in the sport of, you know, you make a mistake, it's the end of the world. It's soccer and it's life. You're going to make mistakes. I make mistakes every day. Nothing's perfect. You're going to make mistakes. It's how you continue to build from those mistakes. How do you get better from those mistakes? That's what's going to make you a better player, a better person overall at the end of the day. Not have fear. When you're out on the pitch, when the ball comes to you, you don't want to be thinking, okay, oh, if I miss this pass, what's going to happen? You need to say, no, I'm going to make this pass. We're going to go this way. And if something happens, we're going to fix it. That's what needs to be the case. And I think when... For Juan to say that, I love hearing that, because I think that's exactly the mentality and what you want to see from Atlanta United heading into this season, especially with everything that's going to be happening this season, with how big this season is, with the World Cup coming here, with Tata Martino stepping back in as the manager for Atlanta United. There's a lot of different things coming into play. I loved that that was something that he said about that specific phrase.
So I think with what we can expect on Saturday against Cincinnati, again, pregame coverage starts at 3:30 here on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Kickoff will be just after 4:30. I think it's going to be a work in progress. I think it's going to be something that tactically will be a work in progress. Soccer philosophy, game model, all of those kinds of things, however you want to put it. And people will use a lot of buzzwords at you. That's not what we try to do here on AST and the way we talk about the game. It's not about that. We're talking sports. And I think early in a season, Abe, in general, the tactics, the play calling, those kinds of things, like, yeah, they're a work in progress. But the character stuff that we're talking about, being a protagonist, being unafraid, those kinds of things, that's a non-negotiable for me. That's what I'm looking for on Saturday.
Yeah, when you talk about the protagonist, the thing that came to my mind in a, obviously not a fisticuffs way, but instigating the fight.
Yeah.
And I think way too often last season, teams took the fight to Atlanta, and not only did they take the fight to Atlanta, Atlanta didn't respond. And maybe eventually they did, but it was too little, too late, and all that.
Look, and I think of 2024 as well, and even the playoff run, which was a blast, but teams took the fight to Atlanta in that playoff run. Now, the difference was they fought back.
Right.
But they didn't start the fight. I think this year, if Tata Martino gets his way, they're going to start the fight.
Yeah. And when you talk about character, you talk about mindset, you talk about vision for what this team should be. If it's not there day one, game one, understandable.
Yeah.
You are always going to figure it out as you go, whether it's tactics, whether it's personality individually or as a group, but I think you can install certain aspects of who you are as a team, not as a player, but as a team, and I think that can be shown as you presented from game one.
Yeah, I think tactically and shape and all these different things, I'm not worried about that game one. I'm more worried about, does this team look fearless? Does this team look strong in mentality? Does this team look like they're unafraid? And does this team look like they are taking the fight to the opponent? We're going to find out together on Saturday, and it's going to be a journey in 2026. But coming up after the break, we are going to look back at the previous 9 seasons, some of our favorite memories from the first 9 years of Atlanta United. Coming up on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's Atlanta Soccer tonight, getting you ready for season 10 of Atlanta United. It kicks off on Saturday in Cincinnati, but we're going to look back at the last 9 seasons here, and this segment could absolutely go off the rails, I'm afraid. But we'll see what Abe and Jarrett and John and Maddie all have to say. I'm just going to throw some topics out and see where this goes. Let's start with one that I don't think will create a riot just yet. Favorite kit in club history. Let's leave the home kits to the side because they all have a similar look. Secondary kits. And we haven't seen the new one yet, and it looks amazing, and I'm really excited about it. But secondary kits, what is your favorite secondary kit in team history? Abe Gordon.
Boy, there's a couple that have just been panned by people, and I don't really understand why. The one I actually find myself wearing just generally out more than any of the rest is the bacon kit.
The bacon kit?
I don't know the names for any of these kits.
It was technically the third kit.
Yeah.
I have heard it called the Virginia Tech kit.
Oh.
It gets crushed by people, and I like it. I like the color scheme.
No, I really like it too.
I really dig it. Between that and, again, I don't know the names for any of these.
That's fine. That's fine. This is the fun part.
But the graffiti kit too.
The 404.
Sure,
oh,
whatever.
That's another third kit that is maybe one of my favorites, period.
Those are my two go-tos to just wear United jerseys out. Like, I wouldn't wear them to a game. I'd wear, I'm in the press box. I don't wear any jersey to a game. But, like, if I happen to not be in the press box, I wouldn't wear those. I'd wear the regular
kit. My underrated one that I'll wear out is the black kit. And it's one of the primary kits, the all black kit with the thin red stripes down the middle. Mm-hmm. That is a great looking shirt. It was another one that was panned a lot at the time. Maddie, favorite kit?
Listen, this is my calling card. If anyone can help me find a 404 kit, please help a girl
out.
You
still don't have a 404 kit.
I don't have one. My social media is MadisonCrew7. If you have an idea of how I can get one, please, this is my calling card.
Men's small?
Yes, men's small.
Okay.
This is it, guys.
All right, there
this
you go.
Calling card.
Somebody
please,
out there on the social media.
Help. No, my favorite one, I actually just recently got this about a year or two ago. Actually, thanks to Jason, sent me an eBay link to get it, the Strawberry Concrete kit. I love that kit. It's the secondary kit from the first season.
Yep.
And I have wanted this kit since 2017, but I just never got one because I always would get the primary kits or in that way. Like, I would just do that. And then obviously the King Peach kit came along and then the gold with the white too, but I never got my hands on the Strawberry Concrete kit.
I finally have it,
and I love it.
There weren't a whole lot of them sold. It was only available 1 year. I'll have a really hot take on this one. I actually preferred the very rarely seen variant where they wore the concrete and strawberry top with white shorts.
Ooh,
I think that's what they wore against Orlando in the Tito Villalba game down there with the Rocket. That was what they wore when the red shorts clashed.
Yep.
The gray with white, I really liked. That was a great one. Jarrett, your favorite?
I feel like I remember people complaining about this in the booth because it was hard to see.
There's been a couple of those.
Yes.
Yeah. For me, the peach kit holds a special place.
Okay.
I know, like, reading the peach numbers was kind of tricky. Reading peach names especially was kind of tricky, especially when a lot of La Banda was dyeing their hair the exact same shade of bleach.
It wasn't as difficult as the gold kit. The gold kit was the most difficult.
That was a struggle.
And we had a whole bunch of central midfielders that were all the same body type and all did their hair the same way too often. Yes, Franco Ibarra, Mateo Sosetu, I'm talking to both of you. You guys would dye your hair at the same time. And in that gold kit, you couldn't see any numbers at all.
Yeah.
And that was the season a lot of that we weren't in the building because that was during the 2020 and 2021 seasons. So, yeah, the gold kit, I like the shirt. I don't like seeing that shirt on the field.
And to Abe's point with the third kits, obviously the third kits are great. And I am a zealot that every third kit, if you're going to make a third kit, it should be gaudy and tacky and as far out there as you can possibly make it. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, it's a third kit. It should be as off the walls as you can possibly make it.
404.
Yeah.
The 404 kit is so crazy for a soccer kit.
It's so Atlanta-coded, though.
Yes,
yeah,
like, that's
the
thing.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
I remember when that came out and people were like, I don't get it. And I'm like, you're not from Atlanta, are you? No. Okay, that's what I thought.
Here's the thing about that kit is you can wear it away from Atlanta and people will think it's dope, have no clue it's a soccer jersey or that it's representing United.
It was used correctly. It was absolutely used correctly in this circumstance.
Yeah.
I'm down with that usage, sir.
No, you can't do it.
Oh, boy.
No.
Jason, you are correct. In the Tito Villalba game.
That was the gray with the white
shorts.
Yeah, the white shorts, white socks, the concrete and strawberry shirt. That is a very underrated look. Okay, so we've talked kits. Wildest game in club history. Off the top of your head, John Nelson, what was the wildest game in club history?
Oh, it's Five Stripes After Dark with San Jose.
San Jose? You're going with San Jose? Okay, that one's off the board.
Aha!
Madison,
yes.
Wildest game in club history. That one is off the board. Wildest.
Well, I mean, Mike kind of took that one from earlier, but the Campionis Cup.
Okay.
Absolutely insane. It was insanity.
It was. That was back and forth. Florentine Pogba earning a penalty late in the match.
Yep.
Who told us after the game that he did not know how to dive. He got hit and he just fell down because he got hit.
It was so weird looking. I'm like, did he dive? No, he just got hit and fell.
I do remember seeing it on socials.
He told us in the locker room, he's like, I don't know how to dive. He hit my leg and I fell down.
It looked so awkward. Yes. I didn't think it was a foul because I'm like, wait a minute. Is that just a bad dive? No, he really just got hit and crumpled to the ground. All right, so those two are off the board. Abe, wildest game in club history.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the wildest game overall, but like individual moments for a variety of reasons. Give me TRA against Toronto.
Oh, no, that's on the list.
We have almost no real coverage of that goal except for Sophia's pictures. Like no one actually caught
Sophia
that goal in the moment.
Oh, yeah,
and
Sophia, she killed it.
I am so proud of one thing in that moment. It's maybe one of my favorite things that I've ever done broadcasting-wise because we're going through a replay.
Yeah.
Like the replay is up, and when we're at home, you know, you can listen to us on Apple TV as well. So I'm kind of thinking a little bit of like, okay, we're on TV, the replay's on the screen. I'm explaining what's happening. And I see it start. I see TRA sneak out.
Yeah.
And my voice goes up to another volume level, but I finished my point on the replay. I was so proud of myself for that.
It was just one of those things. We've all seen a highlight of a goal scored like that. Never thought it would happen in a high-level game.
Never thought I would see it firsthand.
Right. And it honestly was... Half of the press box was like, wait, what just happened? Like, there was not a lot of understanding of what had actually happened and even that a goal had been scored.
It was nuts. Okay, so that's three off the board. Jarrett, what is the wildest game that has not been mentioned yet?
I could do an entire segment just on this
topic. I know. That's why I left you for towards the end.
I'm going to say, with everything else off the board, 2017, 4th of July, San Jose.
Oh, that's a deep cut.
Yamil Assad draws the second yellow. San Jose plays most of the game down a man.
Okay, I'm gonna have to stop you there because if you have not seen it, and it's kind of hard to find, you're gonna have to go back on YouTube and dig through the highlights. The second foul, or was it the first foul? No, it was the first foul.
The first foul.
The first foul is a straight red.
The first foul
is one of the most egregious tackles I have ever seen in my life.
It studs up into his calf.
Two-footed. He went flying. He looked like he was sitting in a chair and flying through the air with both feet.
It's Derek
going into
Williams
the Atlanta
and
play.
Andy Polo without the compound fracture.
Kofi Sarkodie, this should be on the Mejores Patadas account. It is so bad. And it was just a yellow. And then he got a second yellow. And then the game continued.
Yeah, because then you have Anton Walk scores in that game. Scores a header at the back post. I think that's the game where Joseph almost set himself on fire.
I believe it was.
Because he jumps on the railing, and then the fire at Bobby Dodd shoots up, and it's like from me to John.
He jumped on the platform where the fire was. Yeah.
And then he has to like fall back so he doesn't set himself on fire. Atlanta goes up.
No, he had done it the game before.
Oh, no. So he
up did
to
the
it
fake.
And he does,
yes.
Yeah, he does the Dikembe Mutombo finger whack.
Yes.
That game also has.
I think
Atlanta,
Maddie just saw the foul that we were talking about.
Atlanta goes up and then immediately gives up a goal to Chris Wondolowski against the run of play for no good reason.
Oh, and off the kickoff.
Yeah.
An incredible volley.
Tommy Thompson scores in like
the
second minute.
He scored like
the
second minute. It was wild.
Yeah, and then we had fireworks after
there
the
game.
There
were fireworks. That was unofficially the first full-time report. We did not have post-game shows in 2017, but we had one that night because I did it from a McDonald's parking lot when so many people were calling the station wanting to talk about that game. That was so cool because that was maybe the first moment I think there'd been a couple up to that point that year, but that was the first one where fans were like, we need more people talking about this. We want to talk about it. And that's what really pushed in 2018, having pregame and having postgame and blowing out the coverage. All right, you guys have picked four games. I am going to go off the top of my head, not picking the ones that you guys did. The San Jose game in 2023, is that right?
Double free kicks at the end?
The double Thiago Almada goals. The second one was the free kick. Right.
And then he just...
No. The first one was a corner.
Oh, no, you're right.
It was the corner played short because he was just lurking at the top of the 18, curled to the right foot, looped it into the backside, and then the free kick late. That one was crazy. Every game with San Jose has been crazy, and we see them in week two. We see them in week two, and everyone we've played against the Quakes has been crazy.
Bonus points, by the way, to the closed door. Honorable mention to the closed door. Charleston, U.S. Open Cup 2019. Yeah. The only thing you could hear was Leandro González Pires is sitting below the press box.
Yeah, that was a bad idea.
In an empty stadium. And LGP had such a distinct, raspy voice. You can hear him screaming in English and Spanish, but that game like goes 120 minutes. Brendan Vasquez scores two goals in stoppage time, an additional extra time, to get you across the line. That game was so dumb and so beautiful. And it's only played there because they couldn't play it in Charleston because the field was underwater.
Yeah, the field was terrible. They tried to make them play it. Frank DeBoer wore one of the best sports coats in Atlanta United history that night in Charleston. I think it was salmon colored, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't get to wear it in a game because Charleston's field was underwater. Ugh. There were so many things with that. You guys, we get Open Cup madness in 2026.
Let's go.
I am so excited about the chaos of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup in 2026.
Kevin Kratz, two free kicks against Montreal in 15 minutes.
Okay, that's another one on the list. Yeah, that would be another crazy game. But Open Cup, we could do a whole segment on Open Cup crazy games.
Yeah. Jared? This last year, NYC at home.
Yeah.
We talked about that on the list.
Game. I
asked you after that game, I was like, is this the drunkest game ever? And you said it might be.
Yes. That is.
That was wild.
It's not. I think I was caught up in the moment. It did not reach the 400 rabbits level of drunk, but it is on the list for sure. It would be in the top 10, no question.
Yeah. The favorite aspect of this is that for those who are maybe just walking into soccer fanhood, there have been so many. Yeah. Whether you call them drunk, whether you call them crazy, like it's not just Atlanta United has played such an attractive style. Sometimes for worse,
yeah, that's
but sometimes more often than not for better. It really has been an easy watch, an easy turn for fans, and I think that's been beneficial. And again, a little bit more of that coming this year, I hope.
Fingers crossed. That's what we're all hoping for. All right, coming up next, we're going to get into the 3-4-3, but it's a little bit different than we typically do it. We're going to try to explain it and try to fit it all into about 15 minutes as we wrap up this edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Final segment of this Atlanta Soccer Tonight season preview. And y'all know who listen to the show regularly. You know how we end with a little bit of structure, the 3-4-3, but this one's going to be a little different. We're going to talk about three players that are critical to Atlanta United's success in 2026. We'll try to whittle it down a little bit. Some themes that will define the season, and then we always end with things that make us smile. We're going to have more than three this time. Our formation's going to be all out of whack. We'll be cheating and trying to do what DC did in 2020, where they're running players in who weren't on the lineup sheet. All right, players critical to success in 2026. Abe, who is your number one player critical to Atlanta United's success?
Let's go with Steven Alzate.
Okay, why?
I just think there's been a lot of questions and some changes there at the defensive midfield, and a lot of times last year, there was not a very good connection between the attack and the defense. And I think he's being tasked with that this year.
Yeah, and it seemed like from what he said today, he's going to be a little bit higher up the field at times. And they're asking him to get in on goals and assists. So you could absolutely be on that one. Jarrett, who you got?
Alexei Medanchuk.
Okay. Why?
I need him to be the 10 that he's capable of being. He showed you last year when he dragged you through some games. But especially as this team gets more vertical, I think the potential for him to unlock some of those passes he's capable of are absolutely there for him to make magical moments.
John Nelson, who you got?
Lucas Hoyos.
Okay, why?
And well, I was going to say if I could go position group, but obviously I can't go position group. But if you have a veteran presence in net to help Jaden Hibbert along when it comes to his advancement as a pro, when you're in multiple competitions this season, you're going to need depth at keeper. You bring in that 30-something keeper in Lucas Hoyos, and it's going to be some combination of, okay, you're either starting, we've got three in a week, you're going to be starting two of those three. Having that veteran presence to help out after the retirement of Brad Gazan for me, I think it's going to be big between the sticks.
Okay, Maddie, who you got?
Because we all know that I do love talking about defenders and defense, I'm going to go in Naomi High. I think you're going to be asking him a lot, especially being that vocal leader in the back. I think he's talked about it. I feel like in that Lexington game, you saw it too. He's going to be tasked with leading that back line, connecting those dots, making sure everybody's where they need to be, and just being a leader, being someone that people can turn to when he's out there. And he's been really solid in that back line when we saw him at the end of last season. He needs to be someone that you look to and continue that, especially for success for Atlanta United in the back line.
Okay, if I'm the manager of this five-a-side team, I have to fill out the lineup sheet. So I'm going to go with three players, and I am going to go with Naomi High. I am going to go with Steven Alzate, and I'm going to go off the board for the other one. I'm going to go with Latte Lott because he has to score goals. He has to. I've said 15 is the number. If he gets 15, this team will be in the upper half of the playoff teams in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion, 15 or more. If he gets less than that, you're going to be scrambling. You're going to be scrambling to do enough to get in and avoid that play-in game. All right, four themes that will define the season. We'll go in reverse order. Maddie, you're up first.
I think for me, it has to be resilience. I think being able to be resilient, especially in moments where you maybe have a down moment. Maybe you concede a goal early. Maybe you have to eat a foul. Maybe you have to eat a yellow. Maybe there's a random red card that goes in there. How do you handle that resilience? How do you handle adversity in those moments? How do you continue to be resilient when you are faced with adversity on the pitch? I think for me, that's going to be a big thing to watch for, because there were a lot of moments last season where there was that. They were faced with that, and it was hard for them to get out of that hole. How can you do it this season? Because MLS is this league is insane, and anything can happen in a match, and anything can happen. How do you handle that adversity when you're faced with it?
John, what do you have?
Points on the road, 111-5 last year for Atlanta United, and you know that you got to take care of business at home. You only won four last season at Mercedes-Benz. You only won one on the road. More points on the road that you got to have for the steel to get into that second echelon that we're looking at, the Chase Group.
The second tier, the Chase Group, as you're using the Daytona 500 reference, I'm assuming?
That Tour de France thing.
Oh, you're going cycling on it. Wow. I didn't expect that. All right. Jarrett, what theme do you have?
Clinical. This is a team that left a lot of goals on the board if you subscribe to your advanced metrics last year. I know for some people XG is a myth. That's fine. But you have to be clinical. You have to be clinical. This is a team that, when they got in position, left too many goals sitting on the table. We know they're going to give up opportunities because of the way they're going to play. You have to put the ball in the back of the net.
Can I have a hot take real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
XG is like the Easter Bunny. you can dress it up and have somebody like try to make it make sense, but it's not real. All right,
I agree. I'm fine with that.
I'm rolling with it.
XG has its value when you get like north of four. That's when I'm paying attention to.
Yeah. Over time, you can see some trends and stuff. But yes, individual moments, I don't care.
When you've created a 90-minute avalanche, I'll pay attention.
Yeah, okay. All right. Themes, Abe, I hope nobody stole yours. What do you have?
No, surprisingly, it was the first thing I wrote down earlier today. It's health. I think you're counting on Latte Loth up front. You need him to be healthy. I think potentially you're counting on Steon in the back. You need him to be healthy. And when you talk about a team that needs to grow, needs to gel, needs to find that chemistry, you can't be flipping players in and out all the time because of nicks and knacks and knocks. You need some consistency in the lineup whenever it is you do get whatever your first choice is going to be. And they need to get match after match after match together. You got to stay healthy for this team to reach its heights.
I like that. I'm not going to add anything to it. The thing that I think I'll talk about a lot this season, just right now looking at it, and again, we've only seen a little bit of this team so far in 2026. I think I'll be talking a lot about how that identity as a team on the field and how they play how that grows week to week. I think that's going to be something that'll be a recurring theme for me. But I think for success, resilience, getting points on the road, being clinical, and staying healthy are all like absolutely critical for this to work. All right. I always end Atlanta Soccer Tonight because I feel like in a lot of shows, we end on ranting about something. The intersection, we throw darts at things. So like I had to counter that with Atlanta Soccer Tonight with things that make us smile. So you guys all have to provide something. And Abe, you're going to be up first. We'll go back the other way on something about the game, something about Atlanta United, something about 2026, whatever it is that makes you smile tonight.
Yeah, we're going to take it off the pitch and maybe into the some of the offices there at the facilities. Brad Guzan still being around this club.
Yeah.
I think when he announced his retirement, there were the questions, is he going to go into coaching? Is he going to go into media and be an analyst? And I know he did some work there. Is he going to be a broadcaster? Just the idea that he's still involved with the club, I think, is important, and it is something that does make me smile.
Yeah, I think it's important. He's got a new podcast coming out tomorrow as well, the club is putting out. That's going to be interesting, him and Kevin Egan in episode number one. Jarrett, things that make you smile, something that makes you smile.
Denver Summit, 40,000-plus tickets sold for their home opener in the NWSL. They are almost certainly going to break the single-game record in their first ever game they're playing at Empower Stadium. Empower Field, excuse me, at Mile High Stadium where the Broncos play. A really cool setup that's going to unfold for Denver in the NWSL and really fun to see.
And they have a Georgia player in that team. They spent a lot of money on bringing Iowoke in from Lawrenceville, a U.S. Women's National Team level player who was in the last group. I think Atlanta NWSL in 2028 could be breaking some of those marks here in a couple years. So I like that the bar is being set high. That's exciting. John, what you got?
That we are walking in the door right now of the biggest five-year stretch for the sport here in the southeastern United States, based right here in Atlanta. You got a training center in the Southern Crescent. You've got a U-17 team on the youth national team side that went down to St. Vincent and the Grenadines and has qualified for the World Cup. And you've got an Atlanta United Academy player that was in net for the most important match in that group stage that gets you to the World Cup in Qatar in November. You're starting another MLS season for one of the signature franchises in Major League Soccer that we're talking about here for 2 hours on a weekday night. You've got this World Cup thing that people keep talking about that's coming on. You've got another World Cup thing coming up in 31. All the other action that Copa America could be dropping back by. Mm-hmm. It is a pivotal five-year stretch, and we are walking right in the front door.
I think what's cool about it, and I know some people have tried to frame it as make or break for soccer in the United States. Look, those days are gone. You don't have to worry about it. If you love the game, it's not going anywhere. To me, it's is it going to grow faster or is it going to grow slower? Because it's going to continue to grow. It's the third most popular sport, according to recent studies. It has passed baseball in terms of popularity. Now, MLS and NWSL are different. You don't have this conversation with the NFL. You don't have this conversation with baseball or basketball about which leagues you follow. You follow a sport in soccer, and you can choose leagues from all over the world, but it's in such a special place. It's not going anywhere. It's how much faster does it grow because of this five-year cycle. Maddie, what do you have?
I'm going to end it a little bit sentimental, a little bit. This is year 10 for Atlanta United. Year 10, I think it's a big milestone for the club. I think it's a big year, not just for the club, but I think for the city, just with so many, like John was saying, so many things happening. I think with NWSL coming, with the World Cup coming, with the growth of soccer in so many different areas of Georgia, you have it growing in Gainesville, in Canton, in McDonough. You have it growing in the Metro Atlanta area. I know for me, I mean, I grew up with this club. I was at the first game, and it's really surreal getting the chance to cover the team and get to talk about the team, especially heading into year 10. I feel like this club has been through every single like big milestone in my life ever since I believe, if I do the math right, 2017?
Stop right? It.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I might be doing my math wrong, but I am 23 now, so maybe. But I don't know. It's really sentimental for me. I'm really excited for this year. I think it's going to be an incredible year, especially for Atlanta soccer. And I'm excited to be along for the ride. I'm having a good time.
It's crazy that you think back to 10 years ago. At this point, 10 years ago, so 2016. This was right around the time that it was announced that the Atlanta Silverbacks were not coming back, they had stayed around after Atlanta United had announced itself. It was really when preseason should have started. They said, yeah, we're not coming back. So 2016, there was not a professional team in Atlanta. It was a year, like at this point when we were looking ahead, you didn't have any players signed to Atlanta United yet. You didn't have a coach yet. You had some front office. We didn't know when Mercedes-Benz Stadium would open at this point. They didn't have a training ground built. And to go from that 10 years later to having the one of the best stadiums in the world, if not the best, just as a sports venue, having 8 World Cup games coming in 2026 and a semifinal, the second semifinal, the second biggest game in the tournament is going to be in Atlanta. The Wednesday that will set the final. The world will be watching that game in the second largest numbers of any game in that tournament. To have a professional women's team coming back, and we know that it's coming, and we know the dates and the deadlines for all of that. To have, you know, we've talked about academy. We've talked about young players coming through.
Yeah.
To have an outlet for them to play at. You know, I will never forget Dominic Chongqui talking to us about being at that first game last year, right after he signed his first professional contract. You have kids who are now going from fan to academy player to full professional. And we've seen some go and play with some of the biggest clubs in the world in Europe. We've seen some represent the U.S. men's national team. We're going to see the same on the women's side. It's amazing to go from 10 years where we looked at a year, a calendar year, that did not have a professional soccer team, to being disappointed and some people like being angry when we have 30,000 people in the building for a game. I think we take it for granted at times, like what we have. And the last year was really disappointing. It was really frustrating. I think we all felt that in our coverage of the team. And it wears on us just as much as it wears on the fans. Like, I totally get that. It's hard. It's difficult. But even just think back to the end of the year before. That 2024 playoff run is as memorable as anything else I've experienced in sports. That was so good at that time. So we're really lucky, and we're really lucky to get to do this on the best sports talk radio station in the Southeast, one of the best in the country. We're really lucky to get hours of coverage of the sport on this station. And the reason why is because of all of y'all crazy people out there listening all the time. We don't get to do what we do without you. I don't get to do it if I don't have help like these four helping me out tonight. Thank you, Maddie. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jarrett. Thank you, Abe. Thank you, Eric, behind the glass. Thank you, everybody, for listening and being part of this. Atlanta United Season 10 starts on Saturday. Pregame, 3:30 with Abe and Maddie. 4:30 kickoff from Cincinnati with me and Mike. We'll see you then. Adios, everybody.